Hey there, Weber podcast listeners. I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter so you only have the good stuff. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. Thanksgiving is over, and the holiday season is now in full swing. So today we're listening back to a conversation about board games. Later in the show, we'll listen back to an interview with Burlington author, journalist, and historian Garrett Graff. His latest book is called Watergate: A New History, and came out earlier this year. It offers fresh details on the scandal that took down President Nixon and explains some of the similarities and differences between now and the Nixon era. But first, let's hear about adult board games. What makes a good board game, especially if you're an adult playing with friends? Board game experts I spoke to earlier this year say the main factors that determine whether a game is fun or not are visuals and feels, meaningful choices, elements of suspense, interactivity, and of course, the group of people you play with. The kind of board games adults are playing these days require strategy and critical thinking skills, and in many cases are cooperative, and sometimes, well, maybe most of the time, are competitive. We're talking about games like Dungeons & Dragons, Settlers of Catan, Ticket to Ride, Gloomhaven, and Wingspan. To get a better feel for this board game renaissance, earlier this year I spoke to board game fanatics who run groups and clubs, and even businesses that put board games front and center. For that conversation, I spoke with Carrie Winger, who owns the Boardroom in Burlington. It's a full-service restaurant where people can play 700 different games, and they have 500 different titles for sale. I also spoke to Anna Van. She leads the board game meetup group called the Friendly Tabletop Gamers of Essex and Beyond. I started that conversation by asking Carrie how she got the idea for a restaurant that makes sure board games are on the table.
So it got started for me by reading a book called The History of Board Games, and in it, it talked about a rising thing called board game cafes. And I started looking into it and decided, you know what, there's not a lot to do in Vermont if you don't want to be outside in the winter skiing or if you just don't want to hang out at a bar. So I wanted a place where adults could come and hang out. Adults could come and bring children and introduce them to games that they played when they were little and just have an environment for people to get together.
And how has business changed since the beginning of the pandemic? I mean, obviously, people weren't able to meet in person.
Yeah, we opened the end of November 2019 and closed March 2020.
Oh, wow.
So a business based on social gathering in a time of social distancing is very difficult. We do have a bunch of loyal followers who purchase gift certificates and shopped our online store, and that kept us going while we weren't open.
And Anna, you started a meetup group called The Friendly Tabletop. Tell me how that got started.
Wow, it's cool to hear that name on the radio. So I guess like my origin stories of board gaming starts, like many people, with Monopoly. Wanted to be a champion Monopoly player when I was a teen. Played it every chance I got. Got older, and I was actually running a meetup group in Salt Lake City. We kind of needed an event to get people together. Board games were an easy way to play that. And one day somebody brought Settlers of Catan, and that was the end for me, the beginning of the end, I guess. That was around 2012. So ever since then, I'd say I've been playing, collecting, bribing people to play with me modern board games. So, yeah.
It's funny because Settlers of Catan was the first board game, the first adult board game that I played where I was like, oh, wait, yep. People play games that aren't Monopoly.
It's the new Monopoly.
I love that. And Anna, you were just at a gaming convention.
Yes.
The biggest one in the country or the world?
I believe the biggest one in the country. I hope I'm right on that. I did hear it many times, said the largest 4 days in gaming in Indianapolis. It's Gen Con. It was originally started by the creator of Dungeons & Dragons, Gary Gygax, in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. It was eventually migrated a few places, and it's now held in Indianapolis annually. It was quite an experience.
Now, Carrie, tell us a little bit about the demographic trends that have drawn people to board games. Is it all? Are you seeing all ages, all genders, all types of people, or are
We're
you seeing
all everything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's college students, sometimes it's an adult. People come in, and the really nice thing is we actually teach games as well. So if people come in and immediately go for Connect Four Battleship, we're like, hey, we have some suggestions, and it gets people to play games that, like you said, you control more, as opposed to rolling the dice, moving the mice, going around the board, handing money back and forth. In modern board games, the game evolves as you play, and you control at least 95% of the things that are going to happen.
And Anna, is that the same for you? Are you seeing that same vast diversity of people?
So I have a perfect way to illustrate it to you. So at the convention, I did a demo playthrough of a game called Kabuto Sumo. Highly recommend, by the way, if you're looking for something that appeals to all ages. I was at a table with a 10-year-old daughter of an older gentleman. I want to say he was in his 60s or 70s. And then myself, 34-year-old. And every single one of us was having an equal amount of fun. Every single one of us was engaged in our own way in the game. There's few things that I can think of in the world that, you know, that broad, diverse group of ages and experiences can enjoy. So, yeah, it's a thing that can appeal to so many people.
Now, pop culture has become filled with comic book references, superheroes, and things that I think a lot of people back in the day considered nerd culture.
Yep.
How has board game culture changed over the years, and is it still that demographic of, quote, nerds?
I don't think so anymore, because the vast type of games, Wingspan is all about birds, and there's stuff about nature. There's
Mariposas.
There's butterflies. Cats and dinosaurs seem to be the most popular. It's not nerd culture. It's something that's perfect to interact with other people. And sometimes people just want to have fun with their friends.
I want to contest that a little.
Okay, let's hear it.
I want to say that I agree with that. Like, I think there is a whole new aspect of it that is more appealing to the mainstream, but I also think that, you know, it's definitely tied to the roots of tabletop gaming. Those systems that you saw originally in things like Dungeons and Dragons. And, you know, to preface this, I don't play role-playing games. I've tried, but for some reason, I wish I was into it, but I do feel the need to give them their credit that, you know, those were the original systems that where these games came from. So yeah, I would say if you're a nerd, it's open to you because you can relate to those various mechanics that you see even in the more popular games.
Now, I want to ask you guys, and sorry if this is a rude question, but do you guys consider yourself like gaming nerds, or or have you evolved from that? I guess maybe that evolved something.
I always jokingly call myself a 12-year-old boy.
Okay.
So yes, definitely. Into the whole Legos, Funko Pops, board games, Star Wars, all of those things all come together for me in particular.
So is it exciting for the two of you to see board games become more mainstream, or
yep.
Or do you feel like that something's being taken away from you, that like you're like a little solid?
No, I think it's amazing. The amount of board games that come out every month are usually around 200 or more new games every month.
Now, are we talking about limited edition and like 0.0 or 0.2 or whatever to the game?
No, we're just talking about brand new games.
Your next hit game, even potentially.
Let's go to Chris in Burlington. Chris, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thanks so much for this conversation. I recently played a game called The Mind with some great friends we had visiting from Montreal. It's really fun, really easy to learn, and we were just playing for hours, and it's a cooperative game. So I'd love to kind of learn more about your guests' favorite cooperative games, and in particular, if there's any that work really great for just two people when it's just my partner and me.
Excellent question, Chris, and thanks for the call. Carrie, you're smiling. You seem really excited to answer this question.
So there are some great cooperative games out there. Besides The Mind, they now came out with The Mind Extreme. So if you really like that, you really need to try The Mind Extreme because it has you going backwards and forwards and all over the place. I'm a huge fan of the Forbiddens. There's Forbidden Desert, Forbidden Island, and Forbidden Sky.
Yep, those are great intros to co-op.
Yeah, Paleo is a good one. Yep. There are so many games out there that are cooperative, and you just got to give them a try. I am really into games like Wingspan that are competitive, but don't have that hard competitive edge. Zero. You're trying to do the best that you can do, and there's nothing that you can do that will affect your partner.
Yeah, I believe we call those Euro because they are less kind of attack your opponent, whereas American games, or sometimes they jokingly call it Ameritrash, where you're more openly attacking your opponents. It's more of an aggressive thing.
And the second part to Chris's question was two-player games. For people that are home with their partner or home with like one other person, what are good suggestions you have for two-player games?
Two-player co-op is a little tough just because it's you versus the game. However, you can actually, like, it's a controversial suggestion, but Pandemic, you can actually play that solo because it's cooperative. So you would just take on all the roles of all the people fighting the pandemic as one person. You would be the decision maker. But the game is designed to play with multiple people. You know, the old saying, two brains are better than one. So pluses and minuses with that. But I'm sure, does The Mind have a two-player variant or not really?
No.
Yeah.
It's tougher
to build a co-op game with two, with less players.
And that's why we go with the Euro, where it's not as competitive and you don't feel like you're attacking the other person.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion.
We got an email from Lisa and Rupert. They email us and say, we host a weekly board game night. It's a small but lively gathering. Most of our older attendees prefer the classics like chess, Scrabble, and backgammon. But we do play more modern board games like Ticket to Ride, Apples to Apples, and Azul. As a host, I try to make sure that I have the broadest age-appropriate games. My personal favorite game is out of a print board game called Masterpiece. Have you heard of Masterpiece?
We have Masterpiece. It is actually my original copy in the cafe. It's how I taught my kids about art.
Mm-hmm. Love that. And what's your relationship to Master? Have you played?
I haven't played that one, but I have an art-themed game that I love. Actually brought it with me. Pantone.
Okay.
Yes.
And let's go to Charlie from Northfield. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks for letting me be here. I was wondering if your guest, who has the restaurant, is familiar with a game called Tuck, and does she have it at her restaurant?
Carrie, that's for you. Tuck?
Is it spelled T-A-K?
Tac.
Well, it's T-U-K or T-U-C, or in French, it's T-O-Q-U-E. It's a board game played with cribbage-like pegs, similar to Sorry, but it's played with cards, and it's a game of strategy, and, of course, since cards are involved, luck.
It sounds like I need it. I will add that to our list. We do have a lot of older games that have been around forever, the classic vintage games. And
a lot of
we do a lot of cribbage. We do Crokinole, which is a Canadian game where you flick discs on a big round wooden board. We try to incorporate as many different genres, styles, and editions of games as possible.
Now, Andy N. Benson wrote, I've been an avid gamer since I was a teenager 25 years ago. The pandemic was a tough time for me and those in my area playgroup, which is spread throughout the Champlain Valley. We muddled by on the internet, but it wasn't the same. Something was missing. Yep. In the last month, we've begun gathering again in one another's homes, and I realized just how much I missed sitting across the table from my friends, joking, trash-talking, scheming together, and just laughing and visiting with our families. It's been fantastic to be with people again, and I'd go as far as to call it rejuvenating. Ironically, my favorite cooperative board game is Pandemic. We haven't been able to bring ourselves to break it out, though. So let's talk a little bit about how this relationship has been to play board games and be interactive with each other and your teammates, your board game members throughout this pandemic.
Yeah, I fortunately had somebody to play with and my staff. We were a very small group and we did get together. I do have other friends who did everything online. And it is different being in the room and seeing people's expressions and watching them think and the wheels turn and trash talk. And it's just, it's more fun. It's difficult to do online.
Yeah, I started my group, the Friendly Tabletop Gamers, just as Governor Scott first lifted pandemic restrictions about a year ago. It was kind of tentative. I wasn't sure how it was going to go. Scheduled the first meetup in a Starbucks and had 20 people show up. So there were clearly people that kind of missed that special human connection I think you can only get from something like a game. So
today's show is a rebroadcast of a conversation back in August all about board games. On this Black Friday, we thought we'd listen back to this show for game recommendations if you're stuck with family or want new inspiration. Now, when we talk about adult board games, we're not only talking about the classics like Monopoly or Clue. We're talking about newer games like Settlers of Catan, Wingspan, and Ticket to Ride, which all seem to be crowd favorites for a new generation of tabletop gamers. But the list of new board games can seem endless. Let's return to the conversation from earlier this year with Carrie Winger, who owns the Boardroom restaurant that offers hundreds of different games to play, and Anna Van, who leads a board game meetup group. After talking to them about a variety of new games, I asked them for recommendations for games that are both cooperative and competitive. But first, I had to ask them about a game that was being recommended over and over by listeners, a game called Wingspan. Here's Carrie explaining what Wingspan is all about.
Wingspan is an engine-building resource management game. It was designed by a woman who was tired of war games and wanted to incorporate her love of ornithology into a game. And it's so much fun. It's a great game. You just have to see it to understand it.
I want to give a shout out to Fire Tower. I actually helped out the creators at Gen Con demoing their game this past weekend. Also very heavy nature theme, beautiful artwork. And there's a lot of those games lately that are incorporating those nature themes. And I feel like as a Vermont gamer, that appeals to me.
And I feel like we got an email from somebody, and I can't find it right now, that wrote us about Fire Tower, saying that
wow,
that was a game that was built, that was designed here in Vermont by two Vermonters.
It was designed by a Vermonter. It's a couple. They're from New York now, but originally one of the creators was from West Bolton. So yeah, that is a Vermont creator.
Super, super exciting. And let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Thomas and Charlotte. Thomas, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hello, thank you. Yes, I just wanted to comment and get a question about, I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And so my wife and I like to play games, but we can't play like the big heavy Euros, even though we like to, as much. But there are a lot of good 15-20 minute games that they can play. I just wanted to throw a few out. And then if there's any suggestions that your guests may have too, that'd be great to hear. So Scout is a really good one. Regicide, you can play with a deck of cards. So you even need to go buy it. Just need to look up the rules online. Then there's a bunch of 2-player games, Caper, Patchwork, a lot of fun ones like that. And also for the 5- and 2-year-old, Outfoxed is a good one to play with your kids. And Magic Mountain just came out, and that's a really good cooperative one too.
Sweet. Yeah, the Haba games, any of theirs are
I just bought
incredible.
My first orchard for my 2-year-old nephew, starting him young.
We always suggest Patchwork. Jaipur is a good quick one.
Jaipur is fantastic.
For two people. Encore is one of my favorites, which is
Fox
2 to 5. Yeah, Fox in the Forest.
Yeah,
Fox
like
in the Forest
kicking.
Duet.
Thanks for your call, Thomas. And Tim on Twitter shares, I'd love to tell you about the Endangered Alphabet game created in Burlington. Also, there's a game called Ulysses, I think is the name, Legends of Nomads. It's designed to support traditional Mongolian culture and language.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with this Mongolian game, either of you?
I am familiar with it because of the South Burlington Library. I believe they had the creator come in at one point to introduce it. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but it sounded amazing, and it's just an example of the many ways that board games are as diverse as we are.
And I want to read another email. Dave writes, my family enjoys both cooperative and competitive games. In fact, my group of college friends has an annual gaming weekend with 9 guys playing a variety of board games for a whole weekend in January. The most amazing thing is that now all of our friends have kids into board games. Some of our favorites includes Lords of Waterdeep, Ancestry, Memoir 44, Settlers of Catan, and Forbidden Island / Desert.
Yep, solid.
Is that a solid list for y'all? Would y'all add anything to that list for a weekend?
I would add Brass. I'm all about that one right now. Just played it last night. And I want to give a shout out to Space Cats Fight Fascism, which you wouldn't think is a game, but it totally is. We played it last night. It's by the Tessa Collective. I highly recommend checking out their games. They've got some really interesting titles out there. So, yeah.
And I would just like to say, if listeners are interested in learning more about board games and the type of board games, the Bible for board gamers is called BoardGameGeek.com.
It is a rabbit hole.
It lists all the games and in order, like what's the number one game, family.
You can log your collection.
You can learn anything on there.
We're going to bring a good friend of y'all's into the conversation in just a little bit. But before we do, Carrie, I want to hear what's the most popular game or top 3 popular games being sold at your store right now?
Sold or played?
Ooh, good distinction. Let's start with sold and then we'll go to played.
Sold, Wingspan always flies off the shelf.
No pun intended.
Yep. Splendor and whatever is the newest release.
Okay, and then how about being played?
Believe it or not, Mousetrap. but no one realizes that you actually have to play the game to set up the board. Everybody just likes setting it up. Any of the Forbiddens are really popular. And right now, for some of our gamers, Ark Nova, which just came out, is a popular one that people are getting into.
And do you have a favorite board game, Anna?
That's a loaded question.
Right now.
Because it's going to change. But Brass. Right now, Brass Birmingham, for sure. Excellent. Solid economics game.
Perfect.
Love it.
Let's now bring Dave Goodwin, a retiree and regular gamer. Dave, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Oh, thank you.
Now, I hear that you have more experience playing games than our 2 guests combined. Tell us a little bit about how you got started playing board games.
My parents were big gamers of all kinds. And, you know, back then in the 50s when I was born, they played a lot of card games, but they also played the typical family classics, and they introduced those to us very early. So we were constantly playing the games from back then, like Life and Monopoly and Sorry and Trouble, things like that. And that just stuck with me my whole life. I've been gaming as long as I can remember, and kind of got really into it when I joined the Air Force in the early 70s and learned about the industry of wargaming. And those games were very complicated, which really suited me. So we started playing those quite heavily. And then I think it was, mid-1990s, when Settlers of Catan came out, and that really kind of kicked off the board game renaissance that Carrie and Anna have been talking about and getting games into the mainstream.
So it sounds like, and I'm going to bring this to Carrie and Anna, it sounds like Settlers of Catan is kind of like the gateway game
to get
people into adult gaming.
It's either that or Ticket to Ride.
You go.
Yeah, that's another one.
And Dave, what do you think the benefits are to playing board games?
For me, there are 2 main aspects that I get out of it. Number one, of course, is the socialization. I'm a chatterbox. I like to meet people. I like to go to conventions. I like to teach games to people, things like that. So I love that social aspect. And the other thing for someone my age, I don't move around as well as I used to, but my brain, I think, is as good as it's ever been. And I think there's a huge cognitive benefit to learning and playing new games.
And Dave, what's your current favorite game?
My current favorite is probably Nemesis.
Carrie just whispered that, and she's like, it's going to be Nemesis.
Yeah, so you'll probably recognize this story when I explained it. It's basically you wake up on a spaceship, one of your crewmen has a hole in his chest, and you don't know anything that's going on, and there are intruders on the ship that are chasing you.
Fun. And is that, what do you love most about it? Is it just, is it a cooperative game, it sounds like?
It can be either. It can be played cooperatively or competitively. I prefer the competitive one because it has what's called a betrayal mechanic. Mm. And that means that each player gets a set of objectives. And when the first creature comes out on the ship, you have to choose one. And my objective might be for player one not to make it
okay.
to the end of the game. But I cannot attack player one directly. I have to engineer his demise. And it's interesting how that works within the game mechanics.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and sharing your experience with gaming. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, anytime. And I don't know that Carrie's mentioned it yet, but I'm doing a couple of teaching sessions down there this month. So if anyone's interested in learning new games, check out their website and sign up.
Thank you so much for that, Dave. Let's go to Travis in Burlington. Travis, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi there. Thank you. Oh, me. I was just calling in, curious about what brings people to games, and, you know, listening along, I got some of that. And for me, you know, just want to be forward, you know, as a queer person, I love bringing some parts of my identities into games, and was curious, like, you know, how other folks do that. Like, is that important to them? And if so, like, how does that show up for them when they sit down at the table, no matter what they're playing?
Thank you for your call, Travis.
Oh, yeah. So I just wanted to jump in because actually the first group I started when I moved to Vermont was a gay women's gaming group at the Pride Center. And it started out small and eventually had like a pretty good showing. So I think games are, like I've said earlier in the show, like just an awesome way for anybody to feel welcome, to anybody to sit down at the table. And everybody's working together or against each other with the same rule book. So I think it's just one of those great things that can kind of bridge those divides that might otherwise divide us. So
I'm curious, is gaming an is the environment and the community of gaming an open, safe place for queer people and people who maybe don't fit into traditional boxes?
Yeah. It is. We have done a lot with the Pride Center. We have an LGBTQIA+ meetup every month. Our space is listed as a safe space, and we are open to everybody, and we want everybody to know, come as you are.
I want to go to the phones, and I want to talk to Erica in Ferrisburg. Erica, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My family loves board games and also card games, and we like to play them, but my kids have also invented a number of games. And now that my older son is in high school, he has created a card game that he has play tested with some friends and at camp and at his school, and including also with his grandmother. And so it's a really fun game, and he would really like to publish it. I was wondering if anyone on your show today might have some advice.
Yes, this is Carrie from the boardroom. There are tons of competitions out there where you can enter games. I also am in contact with local game developers. One of my employees is actually in the process of developing a game. If you reach out to me through our email, which is theboardroomvt@gmail.com, I will get you some connections to get him headed down the right path.
A quick shout out, the White Box wouldn't be a good resource.
And I want to read another email. Maddie writes, when my girls were young, we would spend long summer days reading and playing games. There always seemed to be one that became the focus of the summer. We tended to play all the games cooperatively, so the 7-year age span between the four of us weren't a barrier. My girls are all grown now, and we are in different states, but we still play when we're together. Which
that's
I think is
wonderful.
Just like a super cute way to just talk about board games and just talk about the community that it brings with friends and family. Let's talk to Ray in Montgomery. Ray, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi. I wanted to just mention an older game, which has been at our cottage maybe since the 30s. It's the original, or one of the original, Snakes and Ladders, with some really scary snakes. It has all sorts of sort of morality issues, like mischief. A girl climbing out in a on a tree limb leads to woe. Down the snake, you follow the snake down, she falls in the lake. Or another one is Pugnacity. It's got two boys fighting, and the snake comes down and shows one of them in pain. And another one, a young girl stealing some fruit from a market, and the snake leads down to trouble. The policeman's there arresting her with two apples. And then if you're, you know, if you're a good child, Courage, a young boy is diving into a pond to rescue someone, and he gets a reward. So that's a classic game. As far as groups go, at our cottage, when we had other kids from other cottages over, we'd all play Monopoly, of course.
Monopoly seems to be the classic game for all families and kids. Ray, thanks so much for your call. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Julie in Gaysville. Julie, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thank you. Exciting topic today. My family is a big, big board game family. It's one of our favorite things to do. But one of the types of games I really like the most are social deception games, games like Werewolf or Deception, Secret Hitler, where each participant in the game has a role and you work together sort of as a team to determine who has which role and who the murderer might be or who the werewolf is that's attaching villagers. I was wondering if your guests had any favorite social deception games.
Julie, thanks for the call. And it's funny, I think Secret Hitler raises a lot of eyebrows, but I have played that game.
I made my family play it at Christmas. It was awkward.
It is. Let's just talk about what other deception games do you guys recommend?
I want to shout out kind of a sleeper, which is Human Era by Lay Waste Games. I found that one to be super fun, time-traveling element to it. Also, Werewolf Ultimate, as the caller mentioned, super fun. Played that at Gen Con at about 2 a.m. in the morning, and it ends up having a whole different feel to it. But, yeah.
And the one-night games, like One Night Werewolf, they've also expanded out to one-night superheroes, one-night villains. There's Secret Hitler is the most popular one in the cafe that people play.
And one thing that I think is funny that I want our listeners to hear this conversation, because we've talked about Settlers of Catan quite a bit, but you guys both have different opinions on if this game is a good game. So let's just, like, Anna, let's start with you. Why do you love it?
So from what I've kind of read online and the views I've seen, I kind of delved, the deeper I got into the hobby, the more I delved into, oh, no, that's, you know, we're past that. But I've kind of opened my mind a little bit more because I've, you know, reading forums and things that, you know, hey, if somebody likes it, that's their right to like it. And if that's what brings somebody to the hobby, why should we bash on that? But you will find a subset of gamers who call it the new Monopoly. And, you know, hey, to each their own.
What does the new Monopoly mean?
What do you think of when you think of Monopoly?
Pass and go.
Making change for 2-3 hours, right? So, you know, Monopoly is a famous game. It's the most, I think it's historically one of the most playtested games in all time, but it is kind of a terrible game, like when you look at the mechanics, when you compare them to what we have today. So take that as you will. But yeah.
Yeah, Catan is, we even have a Catan night. Catan is loved by many. We actually have a 3D Catan set that people can play. And
there's so many versions. Oh, my God.
Expansions of Catan. I personally, there are games that I would rather play than Catan. Yeah. I never have good luck with Catan for the same reason why I don't have good luck with D&D. I don't roll dice well.
Okay.
I tend to like games where I control the majority of the things that are happening and not left up to luck.
Mm. Super fair. So we only have like less than 2 minutes left, but I just want to hear if somebody is new to gaming or they're listening to this show and they're like, you know what, I remember playing games as a kid and now I want to start playing. Where do they start in terms of figuring out what kind of games are right for them?
It all depends on what they like. There's over 25 different styles of mechanics. Board Game Geek is wonderful. Some people like Yahtzee. From Yahtzee, I would go to Encore for cooperative, I would get any of the Forbiddens for a new modern style board game. I would get Wingspan. And instructions are written differently by each game manufacturer. Some are better than others. But there's always videos online that show you how to play.
I got to plug my group here, Friendly Tabletop Gamers on meetup.com. I think the biggest thing to get you into a game is to find somebody to teach you how to play it. And as Carrie mentioned, the how to play videos on YouTube, fantastic. But having a real life person there that knows how to play and you can ask questions real time really makes a big difference. So, yeah, if you can find somebody to teach you the game, that's going to really help you get into it.
Well, this has been a really fun discussion about board games and everything. And listeners, we're going to try to put some of the more popular games on our website for you to go back and find and then read up on and then maybe reach out to Anna or Carrie to learn how to play. I want to thank Carrie Wigner, who is the owner of the Boardman Burlington, a full-service restaurant where people can play 700 different games and they have 500 different titles for sale. Carrie, thank you.
Thank you.
And Anna Van, she's the leader of the board game meetup group called The Friendly Tabletop. Anna, thank you so much.
Happy gaming.
That was Carrie Winger, who owns The Boardroom in Burlington, a full-service restaurant where people can play hundreds of different games. And Anna Van, who leads a board game meetup group called The Friendly Tabletop Gamers of Essex and Beyond. They joined us for that conversation about board games back in August. To find a list of some of the board games mentioned in today's show, you can visit our website, vermontpublic.org.